This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, August the 29th, 2014. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending Friday 29th of August 2014. Gordon and Liz Legg are our editors for this week. If you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That number again, 01962 870 370. And this week, your readers are Claire Porter.
Hi.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter for today. Well, we'll begin as usual with the main headlines, which this week are Monster Who Raped Young Victim Is Jailed, Above Inflation Fare Rises for Train Users, and Rare Amour Cub Makes First Outing. Now, Claire, would you give us that first headline story, please?
Monster Who Raped Young Victim Is Jailed. A man has been jailed for 15 years for tying down and raping a girl in just one of a string of serious sexual attacks on her. A Winchester Crown Court jury last week convicted Peter Burns of assaulting his victim, who cannot be named for legal reasons, in a number of locations in Alresford, including in his car and a shed. Burns, formerly of Windsor Road, Alresford, was convicted by a majority of 11-1 on two counts of rape and a sexual assault charge, and a majority of 10-2 on another count of rape and inciting a child to engage in sexual activity. He was cleared of three sexual assault charges. Sentencing the 47-year-old, senior Winchester judge Keith Cutler said, "You were able to target her and develop your sexual interest in her. You enjoyed the power that gave you. You did not have any concerns about what that was doing to her. She was just an object of your lust. She contemplated suicide and self-harm, didn't know where to turn, but felt she had to go along with what you wanted." He also told Burns he would be on the sex offenders register for life. Summing up, Judge Cutler read out the victim's evidence, in which she said the attacks left her feeling powerless. "I'd close my eyes and pretend I was somewhere else," she said. "It would bring me to the brink of insanity and back. It felt like it was never going to end." He said, "I wasn't allowed to say no. It was a dangerous secret. It was just something I'd grown to live with. I didn't flirt with him and allow a relationship to develop. I did not freely agree. He wanted it to happen, so it would happen." Giving evidence, the youngster said that she had wept throughout Burns' attacks, which had left her depressed and suicidal. Of the occasion when he shackled her, she said, "I said he was a monster. I cried. I told him to stop. I said I hated him." Burns claimed the sex had been consensual and had only occurred after the victim had turned 16. Prosecuting counsel Stephen Parrish told the court, "Why on earth would she be interested in him?" Burns said, "I regret the affair. We both said it shouldn't happen, but it did happen." The court heard that Burns had previous convictions for burglary, theft, and selling false charity lottery tickets. Defence counsel Murray Spenwin said she was unable to forward any strong arguments for mitigation, but added there have been no other concerns raised about any other potential victims. Speaking after the case, Detective Constable Tim McSpadden said, "We have worked closely with the victim to support her throughout this case and the trial itself. I would like to thank her for demonstrating such bravery in coming forward to report these offences, and for her continued courage throughout. I am pleased that this case has now come to a close and that justice has been served. I hope that the victim and her family can now begin to move forward with their lives.
Above inflation fare rises for train users. Winchester Rail passengers are facing hikes in fares which could see annual tickets to London cost almost £5,000. Season tickets will rise by an average of 3.5% in January, following the announcement of the July inflation figures. The New Year rises are based on July's rate of Retail Price Index, RPI, inflation plus 1%. The Office for National Statistics announced last week that the RPI rate for July was 2.5%, which means commuters in England will have to fork out an average of 3.5% in January unless the government decides to intervene. The current standard annual season ticket between Winchester and Waterloo costs £4,696 and will increase by £164 to £4,860 under the new rules. To include London zones 1 to 6, ticket prices will rise by £192.50 from £5,500 to £5,692.50. Train companies also have a flex rule, which allows them to increase some regulated fares by 2% above the average, as long as the overall average remains at the RPI plus 1% level. If that happens, an annual ticket between Winchester and London could cost £4,954.28 or £5,802.50 with an underground pass. Stephen Parker, 47, a chartered surveyor of Fifield Way, Littleton, travels to London daily from Winchester. He said, "I'm not happy about it, and I'm sure there will not be any commuters that are. It's going to make it even more expensive relative to what it already is. As commuters, there's not much we can do about it. It's a rise that's effectively set by the government." Charles Burns, Acting Secretary for Rail Future Wessex Branch, said, "Our particular concern is about the cost of commuting throughout the area. It does mean that the basic season ticket will be £5,000 or more throughout our region, and that is a considerable concern. This is about getting value for money. South West trains are providing a reasonable service, but there is a problem with inflation and income isn't rising at the same rate. That makes it very difficult for people travelling by train. London is an important employment hub for the area, but it has to be affordable." Winchester commuter Joanna Lewis said she was already finding it difficult to afford the costs. She said, "I already cannot afford to travel at peak time unless it's absolutely necessary. But what it will mean for me is that trains after 9 a.m. will become more crowded as more people will not be able to afford peak. Where is all the revenue going? It's not going into more trains as they are not long enough to cope with off-peak demand. It's not going into better trains for commuters as the newer ones cram as many smaller seats in as possible. It's not going into staff, as the station shuts down in the middle of the evening, and it's not going into keeping the trains clean, as by the evening the toilets are often disgusting or broken." She added, "Fares should be frozen and profits should go into more and better commuter trains. I am seriously thinking of looking for work locally now, as it just does not make financial sense to commute."
Rare Amour Cub makes first outing. Members of the public were given a rare treat when they saw a critically endangered leopard cub for the very first time. The baby Amour leopard emerged slowly from her den to follow her mother into their new enclosure at Marwell Zoo, giving animal lovers a sneak peek of the first Amour cub to be born at the zoo for 7 years. The shy 12-week-old took her time, while her 5-year-old mum, Kaya, bounded straight in and onto the rocks to gauge the scene before calling out to her newborn. Special attention was given to the cub's first outing to make sure she found her own way, protected by her mum. Mark Fox, head zookeeper for the carnivore section, said, "With this species being critically endangered, every cub is really important and celebrated. She's quite feisty, which we would expect. She takes after her mum quite well in that way." 3 names have been put forward for the cub: Kanika, Odessa and Raina. And a competition has been launched for the public to vote for their favourite name online. The Russian names were selected to match the origin of the rare species, of which there are only 35 left in the wild. The unnamed cub is the first born to Kaya and the newest addition to a specialist breeding program, which aims to eventually introduce these animals back into the wild. The last Amur leopard cub born at Marwell was in 2007. Kiska was moved to Dortmund Zoo in 2009 and began a family of her own, a sign that the European Endangered Species Breeding Program is moving in the right direction. Mr. Fox added, "It's just not safe in the wild for these animals. They're too used to people. We're working with central government to locate a site which needs to be deemed safe from habitat destruction and poaching, as well as good territory, so to ensure there are no other existing leopards and a good food source. We may even see this cub's, released one day, but that would be the earliest." Marwell's research and higher education manager Heidi Mitchell said, "Preserving genetic diversity of Amur leopards provides at least a line of defence against extinction." To vote for your favourite name, visit marwell.org.uk/leopard cub, and leopard cub is all one word. And there is a photograph of the very proud and protective mother with her absolutely gorgeous little cub, big blue eyes, and, yes, as this keeper says, looking quite feisty.
Thank you very much. And we have the death notices now, and after that, Claire will read Christian comment for us. And the first announcement is O'Neill, Peter Raymond O'Neill, peacefully in his sleep on the 21st of August, age 92.
Dennis, Edward John Dennis, unexpectedly at home on the 18th of August, aged 91.
Gardner, Pam, nay Squib, Gardner, formerly of Colden Common, passed away peacefully on the 21st of August, aged 88.
Gould, Harold Lawrence Gould, on the 9th of August, aged 91.
Grainer, Mike Grainer, of Highclere, Newbury, on August the 11th. He will be missed by his many clients who are in the Winchester area.
King, David King, died peacefully on the 15th of August, aged 83 years.
Maidment, Pauline Maidment, suddenly on the 17th of August, aged 73.
Rovai, Kathleen Rovai, died peacefully at home on 19th of August, aged 90.
Trotter, Suzanne nay Salvage Trotter, of Hilltop, Timsbury, quietly passed away on the 21st of August.
White, Alfred William White, passed away peacefully on 17th of August.
And it's time for Christian comment from Claire, please.
This week it's written by Rosemary A. Baker, and she has headed it, "There Are Many Ways to Be a Good Samaritan." The news that Robin Williams, the actor and comedian, died on August the 11th has occupied much media coverage. Some articles have talked about the manner of his death by suicide, hanging himself. Many have told us of his tortured emotional life with depression and addiction to cocaine and alcohol. Many have said some of his films were bad, but none have criticised him as a person, Indeed, he seems to have been universally liked. He was kind and always wanted to help people. Even in rehab, he offered his support to others. He gave generously of money and time to charitable causes. He was a Christian, an Episcopalian. He can be said to have been a good Samaritan. I noted with interest that most, if not all, of the articles I read had the phone number of the Samaritans either at the beginning or the end of the piece. I don't really have a view on his talents, although I enjoy some of his films. What I thought I would do as a Methodist minister, who is also a practicing psychiatrist, is take a brief look at how society views depression and those who suffer from it. Certainly during my psychiatric training, I often came across people suffering from depression who had both been rejected by their churches and wrongly advised that they did not need treatment if they were true Christians. They obviously weren't praying enough or the right way. How they suffered, as if the illness wasn't enough, to be denied the support of their faith and some of their friends was an additional burden. I was personally astonished at the attitude of some of my fellow Christians, who deemed it acceptable to take drugs for other illnesses, but not for depression. Depression is now recognised as being due to a chemical imbalance in the brain, although there are other factors involved. Antidepressants are not curative, but they can relieve the symptoms as insulin does in diabetes. They can also help make the person more likely to be helped by psychological treatments. There are many ways Christians can be good Samaritans today with regard to those who suffer from mental illness and their families who are often struggling to cope. Listening, supporting, offering practical help, as well as our prayers and encouragement to seek treatment. If these things are not possible, or your inclination, then supporting services might be an option. Do you know what is happening in your area? And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you, Claire. And we're moving on to letters to the editor now. Robin has the first letter, please.
Bus station acts as a central point, and it's written by Sue Webb of Quarry Road, Winchester. Sir, of course Winchester needs a bus station. If there is no central point, how will we, let alone visitors, know where to catch the right bus? And just as importantly, where will the drivers spend their mini-breaks between arrival and departures if termini are scattered all over the town? It's all very well to build over the car parks and encourage us to use the bus or bicycle, but if we can't find the bus or are not able to cycle, what then? We give up and go to another more welcoming town, or take to our cars and spend hours driving round and round trying to find a parking place. There are many other instances around Winchester where it is evident that common sense has gone out of the window and been replaced by EU daftness and lack of knowledge of the area. Sue Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
This letter is headed In Praise of Care Home and comes from the Jones family. With all the recent bad press regarding the standard of care in some residential care homes, we would like to let people know that there are good homes out there as well. Unfortunately, our father had been suffering from dementia for the last 6 months or so and had been cared for at home, mostly by our mother, with assistance from the morning social services. However, at the beginning of July, after a visit by the GP, it was felt that he should go into a home. The home chosen was Westacre in Sleepers Hill, Winchester, a home specialising in care for people with dementia. We would now like to say how very, very pleased the entire family were with the care our father received. He was treated with patience and with dignity, and always with a smile, whoever was on duty. He unfortunately deteriorated very quickly whilst in the home and was eventually bedridden. However, the staff ensured that he was turned regularly to prevent pressure sores and that he was kept clean and fresh at all times. Towards the end, the family kept a vigil by our father's bedside, and the staff were very accommodating, one day even providing a tray of sandwiches to feed five people, despite having to care for the other residents as well. Sadly, our father passed away on July 30th. Again, the staff were nothing but kindness and compassion itself to us all. Our father could have ended his days in hospital, and although we have nothing but praise for the hard-working staff in the NHS, we are so glad he was able to stay at Westacre. On behalf of all our family, we would like to thank all the staff at Westacre for their care and compassion in what is a very difficult job. Please keep up the good work so that other families are able to know that their loved ones end their lives with the dignity they deserve. And that's from all the Jones family of Downs Road, South Wanston.
How can this be justified? It's a letter from Juliet Howland. How on earth did the historic, once-listed antiques market building in Winchester become unlisted? This 200-year-old building, part of Winchester's history, instead of being incorporated into the Silver Hill development, is going to be demolished. I attended the Silver Hill meeting in July and the one on August the 6th. The opposition to this development was yet again overwhelming. The bus station, valuable to Winchester residents and visitors of all ages and mobility, has been removed from the plan. The large increase in retail space will damage already existing retail businesses, the affordable housing, which will help people who work in Winchester get on the housing ladder. That's been removed as it's not financially viable for the developer, and an historic building which was once worthy of listed status is being destroyed. And still the City Council's Cabinet let the plan go forward to the next stage. How can this be morally or socially justified? Juliet Howland, Abbotsworthy.
Passing Buck on Overgrown Hedge. This is a letter by B.S. Harbord of Denmead. Here in Denmead, we have a hedge running alongside the B2150 main road, owned by Taylor Wimpey and borders their Brambles housing estate. Each year, this hedge dangerously overgrows the pavement, forcing pedestrians to the very edge of the busy road, which means large vehicles' mirrors are inches away from walkers. In other years, when notice to cut this hedge has been given by the parish council, the owners have eventually cut it, just as the notice expires 4 weeks later. With this time delay, of course, it probably means the hedge only has to be cut once. But this year beats all records. On June the 26th, notice was given by the Parish Council to Pinnacle Property Management, who now manage the Brambles estate for Taylor Wimpey, to cut the hedge. When it was pointed out to Pinnacle how dangerous the hedge was, their initial response was to say they were telling their gardeners to give the cutting of the hedge priority. We all thought, great job done. How wrong we were. 2 hours later, Pinnacle said, no can do, because of disturbing nesting birds in the hedge. When they were told by the council highways engineer that pedestrian safety overruled any other matter, Pinnacle suddenly said they were not responsible for this hedge anyway. Back to square one, with Pinnacle and Taylor Wimpey arguing over who was responsible. On July the 23rd, at a parish council meeting, parishioners were told the council highways department were now going to cut the hedge as a matter of safety, and it could be at public cost. Nearly 3 weeks later, guess what? The hedge was still not cut. I think this whole episode shows how certain developers will promise everything to get permission to build, but once having it, care little for the local environment especially if it costs money, while they continue to run rings round bylaws. B.S. Harbord, Thompson's Lane, Denmead.
And this letter from Jeff Bruty also queries some of the decisions made by councils. The letters of M. Bidwell and Mrs. Lane in the Chronicle, August the 21st, echo the concerns of the vast majority of Winchester people about the way this city is being run. There has been the fiasco of the leisure centre, the approval of the diversion of Andover Road to run through a new housing estate, and now the plans for Silver Hill that are in nobody's interest other than the developers. Most of the major planning decisions bulldozed through by this council seem to me to defy logic. Sometimes I wonder if the lunatics have taken over the asylum. The main, virtually the only, justification for giving permission to Carla Holmes to develop Barton Farm was that 800 affordable homes and a much-needed school would be built there. If Henderson can demonstrate that they hold the council to ransom over affordable homes at Silver Hill, does anyone really believe that Carla will not follow suit? And despite the Section 106 agreement they entered into, build only a small proportion of the promised 800 dwellings? I don't. And what's more, I have grave doubts that the 2,000 houses will be built on the site in the next 10 years either. Jeff Bruty, Manningford Close, Winchester.
This letter, headed Speeding, Does Anyone Give a Damn?, is written by John McCoyd. Sir, 40, 50, nearly 60 miles an hour, yes, 60 miles an hour, in a Hampshire village. Only question, does anyone give a damn? Not a lot of car owners. It is mainly South Wanston drivers who are breaking the 30 mile an hour speed limit by more than 10 miles an hour. They have got 20 miles an hour limits in Whitchurch now, including the flashing 20 signs. I expect Sutton Scotney may be doing similar limits at some time. The governors of South Wanston Primary School want a 20 is plenty sign on Downs Road, but Hampshire County Council does not give a damn. Wait until a kid is injured, I suppose. A wide ramp is needed at the important junction of Stainers Lane and Downs Road near the bus stop, like they have in Winchester and Swanmore schools. I expect the local and parish councillors are too influenced by car owners to do anything. They prefer to protest against wind farms, after all, and don't care about speed limits. The police can't do anything as they have had their budget cut by 20%. So, as usual, all the money is spent talking about it and not doing anything. Does anyone give a damn? John McCoyd, Groves Close, South Wanston.
And on the similar subject, under the heading Not Wasting Money on This, Clinton W.H. Coombs of Fordington Road, Winchester, says, I notice the new 20 miles per hour speed limit markings have been spray painted on the relevant roads, which hopefully will ensure that a large amount of money and effort is not wasted if the scheme does not work or needs amending. Clinton W.H. Coombs, Fordington Road, Winchester.
Sue Falconer says, Join our sports campaign. We have enjoyed many successful sporting events this summer, both locally and nationally. Glasgow 2014 entertained thousands all over the world, and no doubt, like London 2012, will inspire many in their chosen sport. Many of the competing athletes began their sporting careers in a grassroots club, nurtured by coaches and inspired by other athletes. For every athlete competing for their country, there are thousands enjoying the benefit of sport for fitness and fun, all ages and abilities, and guiding young people into a healthy lifetime activity. Sport is embedded in our culture nationally and locally, and the value is immeasurable. Winchester is very much part of this, leading the way as one of the most active areas of Britain. Around half of all adults here take part in sport at least once a week, and thousands of local children participate through clubs, schools and colleges. But we desperately need new sports facilities suitable for training and competition. Many community groups have long waiting lists and struggle to access facilities. We now have the opportunity, or obligation, to build a facility to inspire sport and activity in our local community for the next 40 years or more. Winchester is a great place to live, but it could be better, and we can do something about this. 2012 Hours is a fundraising campaign which began on the second anniversary of 2012 and will last for 2012 Hours, ending on October the 19th. This is our opportunity to come together as a community with local organisations and make a lasting difference. As Lord Smith of Kelvin, chairman of the Glasgow 2014 Organising Committee, said at the closing ceremony, "Sport unites us. It brings us together as athletes, as fans and as friends. Sport transcends language, nationality and politics. No matter who you are or where you are, sport has the power to make you feel part of something bigger." We can all be part of something bigger and part of making Winchester better. Visit 2012hours.org to learn more about how to build our own legacy. Sue Faulkner, Dean Lane, Winchester.
Such a moving service is the title of this letter from Arthur Stitt. I attended the vigil at Winchester Cathedral on August the 4th, its contribution to the Lights Out initiative. The atmosphere in the cathedral was luminous, and the whole service was imbued with a strong sense of empathy for the sacrifice made for us by the fallen and the survivors of the First World War. I have before me your excellent article, Chronicle August the 7th, describing the scene in the cathedral and its theme. Hymns, readings, music, and period films projected onto columns, leading to reconciliation and the hope that lessons have been learned. That's Dean Atwell. When the cathedral was in darkness, the precentor spoke, "As we sit in the dark and the silence, remembering those who huddled in the dark in fear of shells and bombs, you may wish to join with me in quietly humming or singing a verse of Abide With Me. Abide with me, fast falls the eventide, the darkness deepens, Lord, with me abide. When other helpers fail or comforts flee, help of the helpless, O abide with me." My humble thanks to the Dean and Chapter for arranging such a moving service. I, for one, will never forget the evening, nor will I ever forget the supreme sacrifice of the fallen and fighting men in the 1914-18 war. Arthur Stitt, Well Close, Wootton St Lawrence.
Thank you, Claire, and thank you for those letters. A varied topics this week, which makes a nice change. Right, if you have an opinion yourself or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. 01962 860 836. Or you can email, all lowercase here, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could even write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Well, we're staying now with the views of local people, and Claire is going to read Your Say for us. It's the Scottish issue, isn't it? I think.
Well, we asked, following the latest TV debate, do you think Scotland should leave the UK? Carla Young, rather attractive red-haired lady said. She's 39 and a sales assistant from Wharf Hill. As long as they're going to be self-sufficient, then go. It's a difficult say, but it's not really for English people to say unless they're still going to be subsidised. Tony Hamilton, a mature gentleman of 70, retired of Romsey Road, said, "One of the big concerns I have is the motivation of the Scottish National Party. It's being led by personal greed and a need for power. I don't think they're doing it for the good of the Scottish people at all." Francesca Duggan, who's 21, a style consultant from Battery Hill, said, "From a retailer's perspective, it would be handy not to have to deal with Scottish money. It would be nice if they did stay, because I've got a lot of Scottish friends who might move if it became its own state." Ken Fremantle, 86, retired of Saxon Road Hyde, said, "I think they should stay. I don't like change, and it seems to me completely unnecessary. No one knows if this will happen."
Editorial comment this week heads its article, "The Strain of Taking the Train to Work." There can't be many things you'd pay £5,000 for and not expect a certain standard of service in return for your money. Like knowing that your train will turn up on time, or that you will sit comfortably in your own guaranteed seat for your hour's journey to London. Once again, rail commuters are facing an inflation-busting rise in their annual season ticket prices, which could see people travelling from Winchester into the capital having to fork out an eye-popping £4,860, at the very least. The New Year rises are based on the July rate of the Retail Price Index, 2.5%, plus 1%. That will put more strain on commuters, many of whom are already struggling to pay the cost. With wages failing to keep up with the rise in the cost of living, it will be nothing less than a double whammy. Commuters have a legitimate right to know where all this revenue is going. Train operators will say they are investing in better services, but there is little evidence of it for many. The fact is that to have a modern, reliable, clean, safe and speedy train network costs a lot of money. But we all benefit, in one way or another, from having an efficient public transport system. And if we want it, well, we all have to pay for it. And now we've got Robin reading Kalidas's first person, please.
And this is under the heading, "A Dose of Reality Might Do Our EU Cousins Some Good." Just off to France, home of gastronomy, open space, they have twice the hectareage per head of population as we do, and an economy that's going nowhere. As we begin to enjoy, albeit a patchy climb out of the recession, the French are still languishing in the Eurozone. With Germany and Italy, they drive the euro economy, but the steering is so wobbly these days, you'd be tempted to think the wheels have fallen off. So where have they gone wrong? And where have we, once described by the IMF as the sick man of Europe, got it right? Well, it seems we have managed to pick up a reality scope, while the French seem intent on viewing everything through the prism of a bottle of Rosé de Provence. Of course, much of it is driven by égalité, arguably the most cherished of the triumvirate of values gracing La République. Equality manifests itself in democratic expression. One man, one vote is the cry. And who would not vote for robbing from the rich and giving to the poor? Usually, there are more have-nots than haves, so by definition, the democratic process ought to throw up a succession of increasingly egalitarian administrations. Robbing is against the law, so upstanding governments have to utilise legal forms of robbery, which is how some describe taxation. And that is what President Hollande felt he had a mandate to do when he deposed Sarkozy. But what of this? It would appear that after a couple of years of sauce hollandaise, the French are increasingly putting it to the side of their plate and implementing that other well-known electoral device, voting with their feet. As the tax screw tightens, taxpayers who can flee the country, often quite publicly, like Gérard Depardieu, who famously shipped out to Belgium to escape 75% tax rates, do. Those who cannot flee devise ways of avoiding what they see as punitive taxation. The French haven't yet got round to the UK HMRC proposal of direct dipping into personal bank accounts. How does that play with Magna Carta? Both Britain and France, and the rest of Europe for that matter, have the same issues. Ageing populations, a burgeoning welfare state, there are more votes to be had from giveaways than austerity, poor productivity in a global economy, and to a greater or lesser extent, a failure at the lower levels of the education system, which sees the ludicrous situation of school leavers not having enough English and maths to work in offices, and some undergraduates needing an extra foundation year because they are not equipped academically to study for a degree course. Britain's climb out looks to be steady, not stellar. In Hampshire, we are faring better than nearby counties. Across the Channel, it's not so rosy. Basically, to paraphrase Margaret Thatcher, they've run out of everyone else's money. And guess what? There are fewer people prepared to lend to those who've already proved themselves feckless. Welcome to the real world.
Thank you, Robin. And Jerry has a couple of items from Bulgarum. Thank you.
The first of these is headed Fishing Lodge Wrongly Located. George Stoney has been in touch with Bulgarum to put everyone right on a point of fact over the famous fishing lodge frequented by Foreign Secretary Sir Edward Grey before World War I. This was the place on the banks of the River Itchen where he stayed on the night before Britain declared war on Germany in August 1914. He made the famously prescient observation about the lights going out all over Europe. George wrote in to say the lodge has been wrongly located in Itchen Abbas, when in fact in 1914 it was in Martyr Worthy, a mile or two downstream. The confusion has arisen because after the war, Sir Edward did build a fishing cottage in Itchen Abbas, which later burnt down. George says he is sure of his facts, having explored both sites as a boy some 60-plus years ago. And the second item is entitled Friendly Town Named in Survey. In response to a survey conducted by an insurance comparison site, The Telegraph has compiled a list of some of the friendliest places in Britain, including Alsford. Comparethemarket.com revealed 3/4 of those interviewed across the country would not think about getting to know their new neighbours if they moved. The survey put together a list of the top 20 friendliest places in the UK. Alsford came in at number 12, while towns in Yorkshire, Cumbria and Somerset topped the list. Quoted within the article was Charles Birtles of cbpropertysearch.co.uk. Mr. Birtles said, "This has to be one of the nicest market towns in Britain. It literally has the butcher, the baker and the scented candlestick maker. People come from far and wide, but the shopkeepers always remember their names and ask after their children."
Thank you, Jerry. We can always rely on Bulgarum for something nicely alternative. And we're going to move on to historical items now. And I'm starting off with 200 years ago. And the date is August the 29th, 1814. Accident delays Commamere. Lord Commamere was delayed on his way to the grand dinner at Chester on the 15th inst by an unfortunate accident which happened at Holywell. His lordship, being recognised before he entered the town, a large concourse of people received him amid the loudest acclamations, took the horses from the carriage, and drew his lordship and his beautiful bride through the town. Some small guns were fired in honour of the noble visitors, and by some unlucky accident, a poor man's hand was shot off. And the next item is, on Sunday, a fracas took place in Duke Street, Westminster Road, near the obelisk, at the chapel erected to Joanna Southcote by voluntary subscription. The Reverend Mr. Tozer, a Lothrender, who has long officiated as the Grand Minister and expounder of the doctrines and prophecies of Joanna at this Shrine of Delusion, had been challenged to a formal controversy by Reverend Mr. Colston, a boot closer, who undertook to confute the tenets of the sect. A report became current that the prophetess herself was in the chapel. A battle followed, in which, after a severe contest, the partisans of Joanna were routed.
100 years ago, August the 29th, 1914, the troops praised. Graphic stories of how the British troops at Mons fought during the 2 days in which they bore the brunt of the main German advance reached Paris in the early hours of this morning, when officers arriving from the front reported at the War Office and in subsequent conversation told of the wonderful coolness and daring of our men. The shooting of our infantry on the firing line, they said, was wonderful. Every time a German's head showed above the trenches, and every time the German infantry attempted to rush a position, there came a withering rifle fire from the khaki-clad forms lying in extended formation along a big battlefront. And the second paragraph. Sir, at this, the greatest crisis in the history of our country, it is the plain duty of every young man to be exercising for the defence of his fatherland. Who just now wants to read cricket scores or football results? I think, sir, you would be doing our country some service by excluding these reports. Will our young women of every rank in life not help their country by showing unmistakably their disapproval of and their contempt for the loafing and useless young men who are standing aside when our mother country is calling on them?
And this is 50 years ago, two items, August the 29th, 1964, with the heading Andover Men Land Huge Fish. Two Andover sea fishermen had big catches over the weekend. Mr. Alan Harvey of Marchant Road, Andover, was fishing with some friends in a boat in deep water some 16 miles off Bournemouth on Saturday, when he hooked and brought in a 114-pound blue shark. The shark is being claimed as a new British record. Mr. John Dunn of Portway Close, Andover, was boat fishing off the Isle of Wight on Sunday afternoon when he hooked a 74-pound skate. It took three of his friends to haul it on board. The skate was 5 foot 3 inches long. And the second item, a large audience cheered a weary and unshaven, syncopating Sandy Strickland when he completed his carnival marathon piano playing feat on Saturday. He stopped playing on the stroke of 11 p.m. for the first time since he had started at the Lee Road Drill Hall at 10 a.m. the previous Monday. In playing non-stop for 133 hours, he beat a record of 132.5 hours set up at an Eastleigh Carnival Marathon in the same hall in 1960 by Musical Marie, Mrs. M. Ashton of Manchester.
25 years ago, September the 1st, 1989. Baffled bus boarders are bemused and scratching their heads when their normal number of bus draws up beside them. "Wait a minute," they cry. "Is this the right bus? We don't want to end up in Chesterfield or some place so far up country." For the buses have been a puzzle in Winchester and some other parts of the county. Green and cream livery and big lettering on the side bearing the name East Midland. And the second item. There was a happy ending to a bizarre case of gnome napping, which had caused a bit of a stir in King's Somborne during the past fortnight. The mystery began when the gnome's owner, James Howard, found one of his two gnomes missing with a note in its place. "Gone on holiday. See you in a fortnight." There were reports that the gnome had been seen in a car heading for Gatwick Airport. By coincidence, a party of Mr. Howard's friends had that day flown to Crete for a fortnight's holiday.
Thank you, Jerry. And as we are commemorating the First World War, the Hampshire Chronicle continues its feature articles, and there is one here. "The heavy assault carried out with great skill" is the heading of the article. The pages of the paper 100 years ago carried the latest statement issued by the British Official Press Bureau, which reported that British forces had successfully reached their intended new position and were engaged in heavy fighting with the enemy. According to the reports, the heavy fighting was more or less continuous, but the enemy had not harassed our operations and the movement of our men had been executed with great skill by the commander of the 1st and 2nd Army Corps. Our forces had been opposed by two German Army Corps and two cavalry divisions, and despite losses to our own men, the losses suffered by the enemy had been considerable. In an address to the House of Commons this afternoon, Prime Minister Mr. Asquith announced that the Commander-in-Chief of the British Expeditionary Forces, Field Marshal Sir John French, had reported that the earlier withdrawal of troops to the new position was successfully effected. However, it was not accomplished without some considerable loss to British men. The men were pressed hard by the enemy, who were, however, shaken off. While it is not desirable to say anything more for the moment, Field Marshal French's reports said that in spite of hard marching and fighting, the British forces are in the best of spirits. The latest information relayed back to the homeland estimated that the loss of British troops from casualties was something like over 2,000. And this is accompanied by a small snip of announcement publicly, and it's headed, "British troops in the great battle. Cool resistance. Heavy losses inflicted on the enemy. Report from Sir John French. Over 2,000 casualties on our side. Skillful move to a new position." And that's that item on the First World War. But then with this is a photograph of two lads who can't be more than 11 years old, and they are two boys from France who take on their father's roles as onion sellers. These young French onion sellers, pictured in the photograph I've just described, exactly 100 years ago in the environs of Southampton, and they were taking the reins of their family business while their parents and brothers were absent fighting for their country. And despite their tender years, these young men were sent to England to peddle the onion crops, which in times of peace would have been work undertaken by their parents. With their elders engaged elsewhere, the responsibility of the family business and the need to provide for their mothers and sisters back home in France had fallen squarely on these very young soldiers. And finally, this article says there are few people still alive who lived through the terrible years of the First World War. Yet every family has its own memories, stories of fathers, grandfathers, brothers or other relatives serving at the front or coping with life back home waiting for news of loved ones. These memories have been handed down through the generations And we would like you to get in touch with us and tell us your family memories of the First World War years. And that would be to the Hampshire Chronicle. And we come to the What's On section now, and I'm going to start with theatre, together with the First World War commemoration. At the Winchester Theatre Royal, there is a production called Not About Heroes. It's the story of the Great War, poets Wilfred Owen and Siegfried Sassoon. It's on the 11th to the 14th of September at 7:30, and there's a matinee on Friday the 12th of September at 1:30 p.m. Also, there is a Spanish dancing performance from Jaleo Flamenco. It's described as a fusion of sizzling dance with virtuoso guitar. And that's on Thursday, the 18th of September at 7:30. Both of those items are at Winchester Theatre Royal, and the box office number is 01962 840 440. 01962 840 440. And Noel Coward's sparkling comedy Private Lives is being performed at the Plaza Theatre Romsey by the Rayods Drama Group. And that's Private Lives, and it's on the 16th to the 20th of September 2014. Its box office number is 01794 512 987. 01794 512 987, and again that's at the Plaza Theatre, Romsey. There are a couple of concerts to tell you about, and on Friday, September the 5th, The Voice of the Turtle Dove at Winchester Cathedral. It's at 7:30. It's music by John Shepherd, Richard Davey and William Mundy. The Golden Age of Renaissance Polyphony. The tickets are £30 down to £15, and it can be booked at Winchester Cathedral on 85727 275. And on Saturday, September the 6th, Southampton Youth Orchestra, their Leavers concert. That's at Romsey Abbey at 7:30, performing works by Dvorak and Butterworth. There are unreserved seats for £10, and there are concessions. And this is in aid of the Southampton Youth Orchestra and the Rotary Charities. Rebooking there will be on 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. There's a show returning. Alsford Show returns. One of Hampshire's most popular country shows returns to Alsford on Saturday, the 6th of September. The town's 106th agricultural show will be held at Titchbourne Park from 9 a.m. until 6 p.m. The heart of the event remains farming, so there will be livestock classes and static displays of farm equipment, modern and vintage. The show rings will host a variety of displays, including Rockwood Dog Display Team, Iberian horses, Shire horses, birds of prey, a parade of hounds, beagles and bloodhounds, champion livestock, show jumping and carriage riding. Very active. There will also be 150 trade stands. Before August the 31st, tickets are £13 for adults, £9 for seniors, and free for children if under 14, if accompanied by an adult. On the day, the tickets are £2 more. That will be £15. And another show, the Romsey Show, and this is a preview from the Hampshire Chronicle. This year's Romsey Show will be commemorating Hampshire life during the First World War. On Saturday, September the 13th, the annual show will have an aerial display by replica aeroplanes from the First World War, the band and bugles of the Rifles, a replica First World War tank, and a horse-drawn 18-pound field gun, as well as a field of remembrance. The agriculture show will also have some show rings with horses, cattle, sheep and donkeys, as well as a grand parade show, jumping and vintage farm material machinery. There will be countryside village and arena with rural crafts, gun dogs, otters, water buffalo,
birds of prey and flying fish, and the regular favourite including alpacas, the family dog show, fun fair, winemaking and bees and honey. How can you not go to that? That's such a busy show. The tickets are available in advance until September the 12th, and they will be available for £37 for families or £43.50 on the day. Adult tickets will cost £13 and £16.50 on the day, and tickets for over 60s will cost £11 or £14.50 on the day. If you want more information, please visit romseyshow.co.uk. That's romseyshow, all one word, .co.uk. There's one exhibition to tell you about that you may be interested in, and it goes to Sunday, October the 12th from now, and it's at the Quaker Meeting House, Colebrook Street in Winchester, and it displays life of conscientious objectors during World War I, including some unique documents. And that you can find information about on Winchester Quakers, all one word, at gmail.com. WinchesterQuakers@gmail.com. Open gardens. The season is nearly coming to an end, isn't it? But on Wednesday, September the 1st, Berry Cottage, Church Road, Upper Farringdon, it's near Alton, is opening its garden. It's a small organic Scottish... Shall I start that again? Yes, I think I will. Small organic cottage garden with roses, clematis, herbaceous borders, pond, bog garden, shrubbery and a small kitchen garden. That's open from 2:30 p.m. until 5. And admission is £2.50. That's Berry Cottage, Church Road, Upper Farringdon. And that's all in what's on for us this week, and it completes our regular items for you. But we'll finish with the regular announcement, which is lighting up times. On Saturday, the 30th of August, the sun will set at 7:56 p.m. And on to Wednesday, the 3rd of September, the sun will rise at 6:21 a.m. and set at 7:47 p.m. And we're going to move on now to our regular items of news for this week. And I think Robin's starting us off.
Valley Park is the best place to live in England. It is a suburb that only began life in the 1980s, but has long been popular with young families. But now it is official. Valley Park is the best place to live in England and Wales. The community in Chandler's Ford has been ranked top for its low crime rates and residents' good health and high income. Chandler's Ford itself came 329th, Winchester 1,405th, and Eastleigh 3,741. Or 40. As it says here. Other desirable areas in the county included the eastern side of the New Forest, Chilworth and West Hampshire. Research looked at 7,137 areas across England and Wales, examining statistics on crime, household income, health, home ownership, the proportion of residents who are earning. This follows a number of recent surveys where the area performed well. Earlier this year, figures from Public Health England revealed that people living in Valley Park have the highest life expectancy locally, with women expected to live to 89.3 and men to 84.7, compared to 83.7 for women and 80.2 for men in Hampshire. And Chandler's Ford itself was named among the places where you are least likely to be burgled in the country by comparison site Money Supermarket, based on insurance claims. The community is predominantly couples with young children, and most residents are professionals who commute. Adam Sparks, director of Chandler's Ford estate agents Sparks Ellison, said the whole of the area was popular, but Valley Park was more desirable. Buyers include young professionals and the retired, but mainly it is a big lure for families. He said Valley Park had the advantage of a good family area, but with good transport links to the M3 and M27 motorways, mainline railway lines going to London and Southampton Airport, recreational facilities and good schools, which he said was key. They have retained in the planning of it a lot of wooded areas with good walks and cycle paths, he said. Borough Councillor Andrew Beasley said the rating, which came about as the result of research carried out by a national newspaper, was a testament to the work of councillors at every level and an active community which cares about where they live. Borough Councillor Alan Dowden said crime was low and antisocial behaviour reduced to negligible levels, and that the area had the lowest council tax in Test Valley.
Well, yes, Robin, but apparently it isn't all good news because a rat infestation is making lives a misery in Valley Park. The vermin have been spotted throughout the area's woodland and parks and near schools. Some residents have taken the matter into their own hands and put down poison and traps, but the population keeps expanding. Now they've had enough and are urging Test Valley Borough Council to rid the area of rodents. Councillor Alan Dowden, ward councillor for Valley Park, said he's been calling for the council to act for around 2 years and has received hundreds of complaints about the infestation during that time. He said, "I'm genuinely worried about children with rats because I know there are diseased rats which can give... I beg your pardon, I think I need to read that again. I know there are diseases rats can give through their urine, and there are 3 nurseries in Valley Park and 2 primary schools. I know that some people are trying to kill them themselves, and that's dangerous. It could be that pets get killed as a result of rats. It's got to be a concerted effort. There needs to be a culling of them, because they breed so quickly, and as we get more mild winters, it's getting worse. Residents say they see the creatures daily." Maggie Poland, 68, vice chair of Tyne Close, said, "Well, I've lived here 23 years and I've never seen rats like this. In the past, you occasionally saw one, but I've never seen as many as this year. You worry about sitting outside or leaving the back door open. I'm worried they might come into my house." Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust said the county's rat population has been increasing because of warm winters and a reduction in habitats for other wildlife. Graham Roberts from the Trust said, "Domestic cats, foxes, owls, weasels and stoats will all happily kill rats. Sadly, many urban areas have left little space for natural wildlife, so rat numbers can increase very quickly. The one very real risk to human health is the disease leptospirosis, which is transmitted through the rat's urine. This can be potentially fatal." A spokesman for Test Valley Borough Council said, "We are aware of the issue of rats in Valley Park and have subsequently investigated. Bait has been laid in areas where we're permitted to do so, taking into account the need to protect other wildlife and watercourses. We will continue to monitor the situation." Well, obviously, the rats read the report saying that Valley Park was a really good place to live, and they all moved in.
Thank you, Jerry.
This article is headed "Approval for Hillside Homes." Winchester planning chiefs have agreed to a hillside development despite objections from local residents. 3 3-bed terraced houses will be built on the steep inclines of Quarry Road, even though 34 letters of objection were received. The letters raised a number of issues to do with the 5-storey elevation, the amount of glass used within the design, and landscaping. Alan Fosters of the St Giles Residents Association said, "We have no objections to the site in principle, but this seems a 5-storey building, the equivalent to St John's House on the Broadway. It's simply too high and too wide." But councillors like the unique design and use of landscaping. Councillor Ernie Jeffs said, My main concern is that there's a monolithic window. However, having now looked at the architect's drawings and the number of trees, I'm quite happy with the building as it stands. Councillors said they were content with the rear elevation, which would reach a maximum of 3 storeys. Councillor Frank Pearson said, "I think it's quite an exciting design, and it's sunk quite deep into the ground. It will look like a 3-storey plot."
Controversial phone mast finally removed. Hampshire's most controversial phone mast has been removed. Contractors have taken down the orange mast on Byron Avenue in Full Flood, Winchester, ending 13 years of argument and debate. Residents battled the mast for more than 4 years, with marches, vigils and legal action, until it was erected in July 2005. Now technology has moved on and the mast is no longer needed. Leading campaigner Karen Barrett of Byron Avenue said, "The demolition squad on Saturday took us all by surprise, as we've been trying to get the mast taken away for over a year. At least, unlike the day it was erected, we didn't have hordes of police to contend with. I just wish my husband Mike, who put so much into the campaign, had lived to see this day. It was ironic that they chose the August bank holiday weekend to take it down, as it's the 3rd anniversary of his death." The campaign centred on fears over the health effects of the masts, situated close to Weston Primary School. Local City and County Councillor Martin Todd said, "It's been surprisingly difficult to get this sorted, but I'm glad we've got it done. I tried, via the County Council officers who work with mobile companies, to coordinate street works via customer services at EE and Orange, via various contact emails on the Orange and EE websites, and even via social media, but finally hit the jackpot when I wrote via the Mobile Operators Association." The Director of Corporate Affairs at EE promised that the phone mast would be removed by the end of August, and last Saturday it went. The mast was switched off some time ago and has been sitting there not working. It was also blocking possible disabled access for a path through to Chilbolton Avenue. Orange proposed the mast in 2001, with planning permission denied in 2002. Orange appealed, and a public inquiry was held in 2002-03, which led to the appeal being allowed. Campaigners went to the High Court and Court of Appeal, but eventually lost the battle, and the mast was erected in July 2005 amid a strong police presence.
We've heard about an infestation of rodents. Now we hear how 5,000 wasps set up home in a bedroom. In decades of pest control, John Burkitt has seen many things, but nothing like this. A giant wasp's nest had taken over the bed of a spare bedroom at a Winchester house. Mr. Burkitt said, "In 45 years, I've never seen anything like it. There must have been 5,000 wasps." The client lives alone in the 5-bedroomed house in St. Cross and had not been in the spare room for several months before her son opened the door and saw the huge nest. The window had been left open. The wasps were enlarging their home by chewing through the pillow and into the mattress. The nest measured about 3 feet wide by 1.5 feet deep. Mr. Burkitt said, "It was a job to deal with it. Well, I had protective gear on. At one stage, there must have been 2,000 wasps buzzing around me. If someone had gone into that room and not known what it was, it would have been pretty serious." Mr. Burkitt, of Oslebury-based Longwood Services, used a spray to kill the insects last Sunday. It gives him mixed feelings. "It's amazing how they build it, by chewing the wood off gates and things. Although they're a pest in homes, I think they're a friend of the gardener by killing aphids. I thought, what a shame. But I had a job to do, and the client was terrified." Mr. Burkitt was able to save the crocheted blanket under the nest. The homeowner declined to comment. The various species of wasps fall into two main categories, solitary wasps and social wasps. Adult solitary wasps live and operate alone, and most do not construct nests. All adult solitary wasps are fertile. By contrast, social wasps exist in colonies numbering up to several thousand individuals and build nests, but in some cases not all of the colony can reproduce. In some species, just the wasp queen and male wasps can mate, whilst the majority of the colony is made up of sterile female workers. And there is a photograph of this quite amazing wasp's nest across the entire width of the bed. Quite frightening.
Boris Bike's forest scheme is rejected. A controversial public bike scheme for the New Forest has been scrapped despite support from professional cyclists and a 2,000 signature petition in its favour. The New Forest National Park Authority did a massive U-turn last week when it decided not to proceed with the controversial £2 million Boris Bike-style project. Members of the authority voting against the plans argued that it was not financially viable due to a spending deadline of March 2015. But they also pointed to an increasing anti-cycling sentiment across the area, which follows repeated problems involving organised mass cycling events. The meeting heard how a task and finish group set up by the authority met three times and collected public feedback, contacted businesses and produced a map of the proposed scheme before concluding the plan should be dropped. But member David Harrison, who is also a Hampshire County Councillor, spoke at length in support for the scheme. He said, "We have a duty to encourage use of forms of transport that could ease congestion and help promote healthy lifestyles, and this would be a significant step in the right direction. The only real risks are that we back out and we let down the government, and we pass up a rare opportunity to get £2 million that we will never see again. Those that argue that cycling is unpopular in the New Forest are just wrong." Last year, the Department for Transport awarded the New Forest NPA £3.57 million total funding to support family cycling. Plans were drawn up for a system involving 250 bikes being available for hire at 20 locations, and initial interest showed that 11 out of 12 businesses contacted wanted to be part of it. A 2,100-strong petition in favour of the scheme was given public support by British Olympic gold-winning cyclist Chris Boardman, but this failed to sway members. At the meeting, there were concerns voiced over potential financial problems, given Barclays' announcement in December that it would no longer sponsor the bike scheme in London. Oliver Crosthwaite-Eyre, who chaired the meeting and proposed the recommendation that the scheme be discontinued, said, "It's about whether this particular project has a chance of success, and that rests on whether it has a financial chance of success. Let's not forget it will run as a business, and if it fails, it will fail quite quickly, so we have to be sure that the figures stack up." Following the decision, the Campaign for National Parks, a charity dedicated to campaigning to protect and promote national parks, issued a statement saying it was really disappointed at the move. It said, "We're aware of local concerns about massive bike rides, but these should not have been allowed to influence decisions on a scheme which is aimed at encouraging a completely different type of cycling." And at the end of this article, it says, "Do you think it is right to veto this scheme? Have your say by writing to Chronicle Letters."
Anger as green space disappears. Residents in Wick have criticised Winchester civic chiefs for giving the green light to build homes on one of the suburb's last green spaces. City councillors approved plans for 12 council houses on a park in Westman Road, saying it was dangerous and rarely used. The council received 39 objections from residents and a petition opposing the application with 240 signatures. Ewan Craig, representing the objectors at a planning meeting last Thursday, said that plans to build 2,000 homes in nearby Barton Farm would prove ample affordable housing and recreation space was a higher local priority. He said, "There is no demonstration that Barton Farm or other sites fail to meet exceptional need. The east side of Wick will become a desert of open space." St Barnabas is already one of the city's most deprived wards for recreation space, with a 12-acre shortfall of parks and play areas under landscape guidelines. But site visits by the council showed that the single-acre park was rarely used. Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, who has lived in the area for more than 40 years, said, "It's always been use it or lose it. Every time I've gone there, there has been nobody there. It's not safe there. It's a disgusting area. It has never been used to its full capacity." Planning chiefs hope that improvements to Taplings Road Community Centre, half a kilometre from Westman Road, could make up for the loss of facilities. Local ward councillor Anne Weir criticised the committee for a lack of transparency and stressed that improving Wick's other green spaces would be crucial to legitimising the use of open space for housing. "If we can get a really substantial improvement in community facilities in Taplings Road, we may have something substantial to offer to residents," she said. "But it's not going to increase the space. There is a net loss. Views in Harestock and St Barnabas communities have been co-opted to support this application, which in fact drives a cart and horses through the values and aims expressed by residents." Councillor Michael Reid said the secluded park was very dangerous because it cannot be seen from nearby houses. "The advice that was given to us by the police was never have one entrance, never have corners. There should always be an escape for children," he said. "This is a piece of land we should not be inviting young people to even be attempting to go down." The new homes, ranging from 1 to 3 bedrooms, are aimed primarily at the elderly and downsizers. Local people on the social housing waiting list will be given priority on all new homes at first letting. And the article is illustrated by a group of local residents protesting about the development of the play area off Westman Road in Wick.
Well, of course, there's no Westminster Diary at the moment, but Winchester MP Steve Brine has been out and about this summer meeting his constituents. It's the fourth year the Winchester and Charlesford MP has conducted his summer tour, and this year, he said, was the busiest yet. The tour takes place each summer while Parliament is in recess and consists of street surgeries, knocking on hundreds of doors across the constituency, and even a supermarket surgery held once again at Sainsbury's in Badger Farm. Mr. Brine also visited Sutton Scotney, Old Alsford, Colgan Common, Sparsholt, Stanmore and Itchen Abbas. A street surgery at Fryon Arcade in Chandler's Ford kicked off this year's programme. He said, "Despite the implications from certain sections of the media that every MP spends the entire summer recess on the beach, the truth is many of us work hard in August and take our family holiday over a fortnight before the schools go back, like everyone else. This year's summer tour was hard going because we did a bit more dates than ever before. But it's always great fun to meet so many different people, and I actually pick up a great deal of new casework as I go." And there is a photograph of Mr. Brine chatting to one of his constituents in Sainsbury's at Badger Farm.
Diamond couple are inseparable. Yesterday marked 60 years of love and laughter for one Winchester couple who have rarely spent a day apart. Derek and June Hobbs, both 81, of Tegdown Meads, their home for the last 52 years, were married on August 28, 1954, at St Bartholomew's in Hyde, after meeting at a local electrics company developing pylons. Mrs Hobbs, then June Murr, met her future husband at Riley and Neat Limited when it had moved to Abbey Mill, and the couple soon hit it off. I started in 1948, and Derek started in 1950, and we started to go out together on May the 12th, 1951, Mrs Hobbs said. We met outside the library, and he was on his bike. The next day we went out along Nun's Walk, though he didn't have anywhere to put his bicycle, so he left it at my house. She added, we've always been together, apart from when he went to do his national service. Mr Hobbs said, I managed to wangle it, so I got posted at Marchwood. I taught the Army Cadet Force at Winchester College. The couple have three children, Claire, 53, Martin, 51, and Graham, 48, and five grandchildren, Emma, Catherine, Sophie, James, and Chloe. They've also added great-granddaughter Katie to the clan. When asked for their secret to their long and happy marriage, they simply shrug and smile in unison. We've never had any real arguments, Mr. Hobbs said. We have a difference of opinion sometimes, but that's all. The couple are hosting a special celebration at the Wessex Hotel with around 50 guests this Saturday, the same place where they held their golden anniversary party. To commemorate their diamond wedding moment, the couple hope to replicate their wedding day photo. Mr. Hobbs' brother, who lives in Australia, will be Skyped on the day and his picture added to the scene. And there are two photographs, one of Derek and June Hobbs today and one on their wedding day.
New homes drawing on the past. A Winchester project that draws on images of the past to illustrate a scheme for future housing is drawing to a close. A community arts project in Stanmore has dipped into the memories and photo collections of local residents. The images will be reproduced on 20 large panels on hoardings at a new housing scheme at the New Queen's Head in Stanmore Lane. Planning permission was recently given for 21 new council houses on the site of the now demolished pub. The project, A Postcard for Stanmore, has been led by community artist Lawrence Dube Rushby. Local people and organisations such as the City of Winchester Trust, the Hampshire Chronicle and the City Council's Museum Department have contributed to the project by delving into their archives. Lawrence has also been recording people's stories. QR codes will be incorporated into the design so that people with tablets and smartphones can listen to the recordings while viewing the image. There is still time to take part by visiting the project website http://apostcardforstanmore.weebly.com. There is a Facebook page, https://www.facebook.com/pages/apostcardforstanmore/774015812622385. And Lawrence can be contacted at apostcardforstanmore@gmail.com or on 07870-536-303. The new homes at the New Queen's Head are due to be completed by April 2016.
New date set for crossing review. A meeting to review plans for a new crossing in Twyford has been postponed. The proposed crossing near Northfields will now be discussed on Wednesday, September the 17th, after residents raised concerns about being away on holiday at the end of August. Twyford Parish Council Chairman Wayne Lawton said, "It's really important people come here and help us finalise the plans for this. We fully support this crossing, and we have done since the beginning. The meeting will be held at the Parish Hall from 4 to 8pm. Councillor Darrell Henry said, "Thorough analysis of the site has been done already, and in order to conform with safety criteria regarding sight lines, together with avoiding mains gas pipelines and the current proposed site, is the only feasible site close to Northfields. The pavement must be widened in this area to allow people to walk back up to the bus stop."
Thank you, everyone. And that concludes our routine Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Can I just remind you that Irene Dowden is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. And we thank Gordon and Liz, our editors this week, and the hard-working copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, we mustn't forget to thank our readers, Claire.
Bye-bye.
Robin.
Goodbye.
Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, goodbye. Could you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, putting the address label inside the wallet. Have a very good week and thank you for listening.